From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in February of 2015 at Brown University. It was an event called 1VYG, or IVG, with the one instead of the I. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it was the first inter-Ivy League conference for first-generation students. And 250 students from all over the place attended that event, described by the New York Times as a giddy meetup for people unaccustomed to speaking with others like them. First-generation college students tend to struggle, especially lower-income first-gen students. 89% of low-income first-generation students don't graduate within 6 years, and 75% of first-generation students who are not low-income don't graduate. Very few attend grad schools. But something interesting is happening. Despite the cost of higher education, and despite the fluctuating job market that's filled with uncertainty, we're still seeing a strong number of first-generation students attending college. According to the U.S. Department of Education, a quarter of white and Asian students on campus are first-generation. 41% of African-American students on campus are first-generation, and that's true for 61% of Latino students at college. We enjoyed the perspectives shared by first-generation students in the New York Times, and we thought it would be enlightening to invite a panel of students to share their own experience as first-generation students. So let me go ahead and welcome my guests for the hour. James Wynn is a St. John Fisher College Class of 2019 student. James, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Also here is Kimberly Statch. She's a student at MCC. Kimberly, welcome to you.
Good afternoon.
And Bernard Rogers is here. He's with the RIT class of 2017. You done?
Yes.
Done.
Thank you. Yes.
Congratulations to
thank
you.
Thank you.
How's that feel?
It feels spectacular. I was just telling my co-panelist here that I still can't believe it. It's something that has been a dream of mine since I was in middle school and high school to be able to go to college and obtain that level of education. So,
well, I want to start with a question for all of you, and then I kind of want to work through your individual stories. And listeners, if you've got some stories or questions, not for the students, but also stories to share, especially when you think about first-generation students and everything that goes along with that, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Bernard, you had a big smile on your face talking about being done. I want to ask you how much you thought of – did you think of yourself as an RIT student, or did you – how much did you think about the fact that you were a first-generation student?
I thought a lot about it, to be honest. I knew what it meant for someone like me to be a first-generation college student. And I guess what I'm saying is I knew the weight that came along with that. So right out of the gate, as I was starting at RIT, I wanted to make sure that I did any and everything to be successful, because I knew what it meant, not only to me, but what it meant to my family and the people who were kind of like watching me.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get into that in just a second. Same question, though, for James. How much did you think of it as, you know, again, do you think of yourself as a college student or a first-generation student?
I think of myself as both, but I do take great pride in being a first-gen student. It, like Bernard said, it is a lot of pressure, you know, for yourself and, you know, thinking about your family as well. But, you know, it's a great feeling. You know, hopefully, once I finish, I'll get that excitement, too.
I mean, if anybody needs any more motivation, you look at Bernard across the table here. My guess is you guys are going to finish. You want that feeling, too. Kimberly, for you, how often do you think about being first gen?
I never really thought of being the first gen. I was just trying to be a good role model for my family. I wanted to show that no matter where we come from, we can do. Sky's the limits.
And you've got a big family now, don't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I've got 5 kids at home between the ages of 21 and 15, and a grandson who's just going to be 2 in January.
Wow. And how are they doing?
They are a handful, but they are doing fabulous.
And they're seeing you now.
Yes.
You know, pursue what you're pursuing.
Yep.
Well, I look forward to hearing how that's impacting them, because I'm sure that's come up. So we're going to work through that. Let's go around the table. Bernard, for you, let's back it up. Tell me about where you grew up and you know, sort of your path to becoming a first-gen student.
Okay, awesome. So I'm from Rochester, born and raised. I come from both my mother and my father, who are from Rochester as well, and I have an older sister. I actually learned about some of the opportunities at RIT through something I was doing in high school. I was a part of a program called Restorative Practices, and it's pretty much about teaching the community, whatever community that is, how to build community and repair harm when it takes place. Through that experience, I met Rebecca Johnson, who is Dr. Dessler, former president of RIT's wife. And she kind of talked to me and some of the students who were helping out lead a training about some of the opportunities at RIT for students from the Rochester City School District. And then after that, a few years later, I learned more about RIT. I would go out there to do a couple of other programs like the Future Business Leaders Experience. And I just fell in love with the campus and ended up applying and got into the wonderful Rochester City Scholars Program.
When's the first time you can remember thinking about seeing yourself as a college student?
I think I first started thinking about being a college student, I would want to say as soon as I enter, I want to say sixth grade, entering middle school. That was really a time where I had a phenomenal teacher. I went to 33 School, which is on Webster Avenue. And I had this phenomenal teacher who really, really just inspired me. Her name is Jeanette Canales. And she was just such a phenomenal teacher. And she inspired me to want to learn and to want to do better and to want to seek all the opportunities that I could. But I do definitely want to also say that I had two parents who, while they didn't understand entirely the mechanics of how the college process worked, always motivated me and pushed me to be the best that I could be. And part of that was attending college.
Did you talk to them at an early age about the idea of college?
Yeah, definitely.
And did they impress upon you the fact that they might not have gone, but they saw it as your future?
Oh, yeah, definitely. They knew how important school was to me, and they knew that I was a smart student, and they knew the importance of education. Again, like I said, even if they couldn't provide all of the mechanics for why to go or how to make it a reality, they knew that it was something that was definitely important for my path and for the path of students.
When you look at your peers around you, you know, the schools that you went to, the environments you grew up in, how many were going to college? How many were talking about college in middle school into high school?
Not many. Very few. Very few students were really focused on the college process. There were a number of programs around that were trying to get students interested in the college process. I can't remember them all, but very few students were talking about college. So it was definitely something that I think from the very beginning, like I said, it was just a dream of mine, something that I always aspired to.
When you got to high school, again, you end up in the Rochester City Scholars Program, you
yes,
said?
Yes, correct.
And that's something we've talked about in this program, but remind our listeners what that is.
Yeah, so the Rochester City Scholars Program is an opportunity that RIT provides, which allows students from the Rochester City School District and now also Rochester City Charter Schools to attend RIT if they get into RIT through its regular admissions process, tuition-free. So that means they pay your full tuition no matter if it's a 4 or 5 year program.
And you met Rebecca Johnson through that program?
So I actually met her before that program. I met her my ninth grade year, like I said, as a part of doing restorative practices.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Cool.
She was the, I think now former director of the Gandhi Institute, and nonviolence training was something that they were heavily into. So restorative practices fit in there nicely, and that was something she was interested in that we happened to be doing.
And by the way, Bill Dessler and Rebecca Johnson, if anybody is like standing right next to them, tap them on the shoulder and tell them to email me. We should talk to them. It's been a little while since we've talked to them, and it would be an interesting conversation, especially with Bill moving on from RIT. But so that they're interesting people, and I bring that up because sometimes you hear about people serving in community in different organizations, and sometimes it's just lip service. They kind of put their money where their mouth is. They're very serious mm-hmm. about it. They're very dedicated, and you seem to have found that out very early.
Oh, definitely, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Thank you so much, because I think a lot of people don't know that about them. They're so selfless. They're so connected to the vision that they have, especially for this program and other programs, and a lot of people don't know that they initiated this program with $1 million of their own personal funds. And if that doesn't speak volumes, I don't know what else does. And even across campus, when they see students, they'll sit down and have lunch with you and catch up with you and provoke thought and ask you what you think about things and really teach you to be a partner in this thing called not only education, but also life.
And so, Bernard, when you were getting ready to go to school, I mean, go to college then, mm-hmm. go to RIT, did you think much about, you know, majors and what exactly you wanted to do, not only over those intervening years, but then how that sets you up for work and post-college life?
I really didn't. I think initially when I got into, when I applied to RIT and I went to college, I understood college as the vessel to get you from one place to eventually a job. But I didn't know it would be the amazing experience that it really was, that it turned out to be. I got whiff of the college experience through a phenomenal program that I did the summer before I started my freshman year at RIT, called the MCAS Summer Bridge Program, MCAS standing for the Multicultural Center for Academic Success. And they're a resource center on campus for students of all backgrounds to just help them be successful while at RIT. And in that program, I got to take 2 credit-bearing courses. I got to learn the lay of the land at campus. I got to network and meet some phenomenal people, including Dr. Dessler and Dr. Johnson, and a host of other RIT people who would become mentors, community members, and great assets.
And that was going into school,
into
RIT?
Yes.
Interesting you say that, because we just had a comment from a listener named Mike in Rochester who says he was a first-generation student at Alfred University. He says he was very successful in high school, but he struggled when he got to college. He and his parents had no idea what he was getting into, and he thinks colleges should have programs, especially to help first-generation students. What do you think of that?
Oh, yes. I definitely agree. And my experience through this program greatly helps that. I mean, when you're entering college as a first generation student, one of the things that I didn't know that was so important to your success would be community. And I, first and foremost, am so glad that Dr. Dessler and Dr. Johnson, who created this program, knew that it wasn't only about the financial side of being able to afford college, but it was also about educating students on what college was and also having that community of people who students could go to, who understands the process, who understands what it's like being a first-generation college student, who they can talk to and, you know, interface with on a level that's far deeper than just financials or academics. That really personal one-on-one time was really great and really needed as well.
Talking to Bernard Rogers, who just graduated. When did you graduate?
I graduated on May 21st.
Freshly minted.
Yes.
With a degree in?
I majored in communication and minored in business and sociology.
And what are you going to do?
Yeah, so actually right now I'm just hanging out in Rochester for the summer, but I got into a college out in LA for the fall, so I'm really, really excited about that. This is kind of something that's different, something that's new, but it's always been a dream of mine. I'm majoring in I'm going into a program that's the Apparel Industry Management Program at the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. And half of it will be learning about the business side of the fashion industry because I love business. And then the other side will be learning how to design. But I'll also, on the side, be pursuing my other dream, which is to be a TV personality and hosting red carpets and being on-air talent and things of that nature as well.
It's good. Meeting you in person, it looks like you had like a botched surgery and that you have a permanent smile. Like, it's always there.
Well, I love smiling, and that's one of the things that people will tell you about me. You know, because when I initially came out of middle school, a lot of people don't notice about me, but, you know, I was a student who was kind of bullied a little bit and who was sometimes persecuted for my clear thought on wanting to be successful and genuinely learning to love school.
So you got picked on for outwardly showing that you wanted to be smart?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Wow.
At such a young age, having that, and I wasn't perfect at any means. Please don't take it as me saying that I was perfect. I wasn't. But I just knew that for where I wanted to get in my life, I needed education. And even though I didn't know where it would take me or how it would take me there, I knew it was important. So, you know, that's a side of me that a lot of people don't know, that I got picked on and I got teased. But those things kind of helped me to understand the very place that I'm in now. And it's the reason why I'm always happy and I go through things just like everybody else. But what I've learned is that intention drives action. So for me, the energy that I bring to my life is going to ultimately get me to the place that I want to be.
Did you ever have a moment when you were bullied or picked on that you thought, maybe I should be a little more reserved. Maybe I shouldn't put my hand up in class, that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, of course. And it led me to sometimes do things that I shouldn't have done. So the one thing that I can think of right now is I remember one time I was feeling so bad for always just trying to do the right thing that one of my friends got me to skip a class. And I remember we were walking around the hall and I skipped the class. And I remember the whole time I felt so bad that I skipped the class, but I was trying to play it off. And I ended up speaking up like towards the middle of that. And I just asked him, I was like, is this what you do? Like when you skip classes, like, is this what you do? You just walk around the halls with nothing to do and this is it? Like, I thought it was like this grand experience because a couple of kids did it. And it wasn't fun at all. And I think that was the early onset to me learning how to find my voice and learning how to say, this isn't what I want to do and it isn't helping me and it isn't helping you. So I'm going to do what I want.
How old were you?
I think at that time, that was like eighth grade. So I had to be no more than maybe
12 or 13?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow. But you said, I don't care if this makes me less cool in your eyes. I'm going back to class.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a good foundation. I had a really, really, really great foundation with my parents. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Well, congratulations on all of your success so far. And you're going to LA starting when?
I'm starting the end of September.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And you got a little time to enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great. You're hearing Bernard Rogers, who just graduated from RIT. We're talking to first-generation college students inspired by a recent piece in the New York Times called I Won't Give Up, How First-Generation Students See College. That's Bernard's story. James Wynn is a St. John Fisher College student, a class of 2019, studying what, James?
Legal studies and political science.
Legal studies and political science. And get a little close to that mic for me. There you go. You slide in there. There you go. So you grew up, tell me about your background. Kind of take me back in the same kind of way Bernard did.
Okay. All right. So I was also born and raised in Rochester. I went to Catholic schools up until sixth grade. And then in seventh grade, I moved to Rush Henrietta. Went to Henrietta for middle school and high school. But throughout those years, I really kind of took on and appreciated service towards the community. And around the time when I was applying for colleges, Fisher was my number one. Yeah, I really liked it. And originally, I did apply for HEOP. I didn't get it.
Tell us what that is.
HEOP is basically a program for students who are financially unable to pay for college and financially unable to pay for a lot of things. So that was my original intent when I did apply to Fisher. And then I did learn about their first generation scholarship program. So when I did apply, it was kind of a shot in the dark. I didn't think I was going to get it. But when I did get called back for an interview, my hopes kind of raised. And what was really great about just the program itself is that they do kind of surround the program with service towards the community, giving back. And that's something they were looking for in their students that they selected. When I was fortunate enough to be offered the scholarship, it was really a surreal moment. After that, I told myself, you know, you gotta really get yourself together when it comes to schoolwork, because I feel like in high school and in middle school, I went through the motions, but I didn't really apply myself as much as I could have.
Was it easy for you
to change my mindset?
No, was school easy? I mean, did you kind of coast?
I coasted in getting, like, you know, B's. I didn't aim high.
Sure, but, sure. But you knew you could get by if you didn't go 100% full throttle.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that. But this motivated you, it sounds like.
Yeah, because without this scholarship, I wouldn't have been able to attend Fisher, which was my number one. And, you know, once I did get to college, I set a goal for myself. Unfortunately, my first semester, you know, I didn't reach that goal that I wanted. And that was when I really, like, knew that things had to change, effort had to increase, and I had to hold myself accountable more than anyone else.
Now, I'd like to get into your college experience in just a minute, but let me just back up and ask a little bit here. So you're a first-generation student.
Yes.
Tell me about your parents.
So both my parents are from Vietnam. My dad is a chef at a diner, and my mom works at a nail salon. So the thing that motivates me the most would definitely be their work ethic. When I did go to Fisher, my main thought was, you know, I have to get in, get out, and then get a job and provide not just for myself, but for them too. The thing was that they worked all the time, and they would spend all their money to raise myself and my brother. And with that, they couldn't set money aside for themselves in order for them to take care of themselves in the future. So that's, you know, that's always something on my mind, you know, kind of like a debt that, you know, I want to be able to take care of them when I graduate and become successful and whatnot.
Do you feel more pressure because of that?
At first, but after, you know, after knowing that I can do it, it's more of like I'm thankful for that, you know, knowing that they've given it their all, so now it's my turn to do the same.
What do they think about you as a college student?
They are very, very proud. It's nice because even though they aren't the best with English, what they can understand, they become very enthusiastic whenever I'll tell them, like, the smallest bit of good news, they'll just light up, and it feels great to see that.
Is English your first language?
Yeah, yes, English is my first language.
How is your...
My Vietnamese? It's not strong.
It's not strong?
Yeah. When I was in elementary school, I struggled with mm-hmm. English, so I worked with another teacher apart from my class time to focus solely on English, and that was for like four or five years. So now, you know, English is basically my major. It's hard because there is a language barrier between me and my parents, but we get by, and it's just, you know, something, another thing to overcome, really.
What a remarkable story. I mean, here you are, you got two wonderfully hardworking parents, so excited and proud for you. With everything that you've gone through in school, focusing on language, you know, you have a not many people listening, James, can relate to having a bit of a language barrier with their own parents, but I know they're excited and proud for you. And now what's the course? What's the best case scenario for you here? You're done when?
May 2019.
So 2 years from now, you're sitting here feeling how Bernard's feeling now. And what would you like to do once you're done? What's the ideal?
The intent is to go to law school straight after Fisher and get a solid scholarship to help pay for law school, because even though I do have the fantastic first generation scholarship to Fisher, there will be money I have to pay back when I'm finished. But they're very excited. They tell all their friends, you know, my son wants to be a lawyer, this and that. And it's a good feeling seeing them that excited.
Why do you like the legal field?
Originally, I was finance. To go back to what I was saying earlier, get in, get out, finance was a very safe route. I knew I'd be able to get a job coming out of Fisher if I were finance. However, my first semester, I was really kind of inspired by one of my professors to basically, you know, live and lead with purpose. And with the legal field, if there's one thing I can take away from my first semester is that you don't have to change the whole world to impact people's lives. Really, if you can positively impact one person's life, it changes their world. And that's, you know, it's the whole working, you know, what's your purpose? And being a lawyer, you have the ability to positively impact someone's life tremendously. Now, I don't know exactly what kind of lawyer I want to be yet, like what kind of field I want to specialize in, but it's, you know, it's the idea that it's going to be possible for me to affect someone positively in a great way. That's, you know, that's what drives me.
When you look at the numbers that I shared that the New York Times had reported, you know, something close to 89% of students, first-generation students who either come from low-income families or need financial assistance, don't graduate within 6 years. You're not you're going to be in the 11%, I think. And, you know, why do you think that is? Do you think there's a number of barriers? You know, as we said, sometimes there isn't. Sometimes schools don't have what Bernard had at RIT, which is sort of this handshake introduction, a helpful primer on what to do and what you're going to experience. That's not always there. Sometimes it's simply just paying semester to semester or making sure that you've got what you need, and some students don't have that. But why do you think that number is so high, James?
I believe that a lot of people are more cynical these days. If people were to tell others, you know, their aspirations or goals, just like Bernard, they might get shut down or kind of marginalized for what they believe in. And that's something that's got to change. There's got to be more people to really inspire others and just kind of show that, you know, there are opportunities. When you see one, you got to take it. And it's really just finding motivation for them, kind of opening their eyes to the possibilities of what could be.
Have you thought about what it's going to be like to be a college graduate?
Not yet.
You try not to get ahead of yourself? What do you think that day is going to be like?
It's going to be, first I'll be very sad knowing that I'll have to leave Fisher because I love my college so much.
I still miss Ohio University, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You will never get over that fully. I just want to warn you. As an old guy, it's just never, you know, if you love college, you will want to stay there forever. But I don't recommend staying there forever. So that sadness, sure. But what else do you think you'll feel?
I'll be really happy seeing how my parents will feel, or, you know, how they'll react seeing me walk across the stage. I would like to talk at graduation. We'll see how that goes, but
I love the big goal.
It would just be a surreal day, really. And, you know, once the day is over, I'll just look back on the day and still not believe that I even got into Fisher.
What a great story. I'm talking to James Wynn, who's going to graduate 2 years from now. 2 years from now, we'll be sitting here with him, and he's going to tell us that all the great things that are happening in his life. You heard Bernard Rogers. After our only break of the hour, we're going to talk to Kimberly Statt, who's a student at MCC, a mother of five, a grandmother of one, and a student herself. And we're going to talk about her experience as a first-generation student, and then we'll get all of their reactions to, you know, just sort of the educational climate in the country today and what we're learning about that. So all of that coming up as we talk to first-generation college students on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we preview an upcoming conference for families of children with autism. The conference this weekend at the Strong Museum of Play will focus on a wide range of issues that impact families. Making friends, improving emotional wellness, interacting with schools, making sure schools have the proper relationships in place to work with kids with autism. All of that and more as we talk autism in our community next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Kimberly Statt is a student at MCC, and you're smiling already. Let's back it up a little bit. Let's talk about where you grew up and you know, your path as a first generation student.
Oh, where I grew up. Oh my goodness, that's a long time ago.
It's not that long. You're a little older than these guys, but
I am a lot older than these guys.
Make sure you're nice and close to that microphone, and let's talk about your story. So, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Well, I started here in Rochester, and my mom decided that the area we lived in was a little dicey, so she moved us out to Hamlin. Was not impressed with that concept. My backyard was a cornfield. I didn't know anybody. I was scared.
That's kind of cool, isn't it? No?
It was, eventually, but, you know, I was scared.
Okay.
I went to Brockport from kindergarten to graduation, and I grew up watching all the college kids because the elementary and high school is in one plot of land, and the college is, like, right next door. So during my duration of elementary school and high school, I'm watching all these college kids. We even took field trips to the college campus. We went ice skating there. We went, did art shows there. And it was beautiful. And I always thought, that's where I'm going to go. That's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go to Brockport when I graduate. Yeah, that's not what happened, though. Life took a little turn for me after high school. And it took me a while to get back on track. I went back. It was like 20 years later from graduation. And believe it or not, I showed up at MCC with my cousin. She's like, come on, let's go. Meet me there. We'll, you know, help me fill out some paperwork. I was like, yeah, no problem. And I ended up applying.
This is how long ago now?
I applied and started at MCC in the fall of 2015.
Okay.
So I applied and was surprised that I got a letter in the mail saying, congratulations, you've been accepted to MCC. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Now it's real.
Now it's real. Now I got to do this. That's awesome. Had to do everything on my own because, unfortunately, my parents had passed in 2013. So, and I was taking care of my family, you know, before I started MCC. I was working at a bar trying to provide for my family.
Sure.
Gotten divorced, taking care of the kids, you know, life stuff. Life goes on. And, I went to a workshop that I heard about after I took my acuplacer at MCC. Heard about the financial aid workshop and went in there and was told what I had to bring, what I needed to fill out the paperwork. And fortunately, they had somebody very helpful to help me fill out my FAFSA and everything else. So that was awesome. I still go to the financial aid workshops to this day.
Sure.
Just to make sure I don't screw anything up. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Understandably so. Were you nervous about the finances?
I was terrified of the finances because I live paycheck to paycheck, and I get assistance. I get food stamps and Medicaid for myself and my family. So the financial was kind of terrifying for me, being able to pay for school and take care of my family at the same time.
Okay, so let's talk about, you know, sort of how you thought about that the whole process. You ended up at MCC with your cousin, you said.
Yes.
And did you think about, well, if I actually do this, what am I going to study? What am I going to do?
I actually had a dream that I never told anybody. But like I said, life got a hold of me. And I was going through some things before I signed up for MCC. And I wanted to become an alcohol and chemical dependency counselor. I was watching a very close person in my life go through something for the 3 years prior, and I didn't like how that person was being treated. And the counselor kept telling me, well, I have to go buy the book. I have to go buy the book. And I was like, I want to see this book. I have to see this book because this book is not helping with the personality of your client. So I went to MCC to get my hands on the book.
And now you're on that path?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, so you're going to become a counselor?
Yes, sir.
And what's the timeline plan for you?
Graduation, hopefully this June, or this coming June 2019.
2018?
19.
Okay. 19. Oh, sorry, 2 years, 2 years from now.
Well, no, it's...
It is 2017.
Yeah, okay, yeah, 2018.
I promised you there'd be no math.
Okay.
That was my fault. So a year from now?
Yes.
And you'll be done.
Yep.
You're on track to be done then. And then what? Ideally, what happens?
I'm going to transfer to Brockport and start their alcohol chemical dependency program that they just started in this past fall.
You got a real track in mind.
Mm-hmm.
If I would have talked to you 3-4 years ago and told you this was the track you're on, what would you have said?
I probably would have laughed in your face, honestly. Because the only thing I could see was the sun going up and the sun coming down and just, like I said, taking care of, making sure the kids had food and were taken care of.
Getting through day to day.
Yep.
And there's, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
No.
No, not at all. But now let's talk about your kids. You've got 5 kids.
Yes.
Between the ages of 15 and 21.
Yes.
And 1 grandchild.
Yes.
What do your kids think of this?
Well, I know my daughter is Very, because I'm raising my three children biologically, and I'm helping with my niece and nephew, so five together.
Okay, yep.
And my daughter, who is my baby, she is so proud of me that I think she's going to end up going to college, and she'll be the first one out of them, because my niece, she does classes at RIT, and she's a junior in high school. She goes to Edison. Actually, the three younger ones all are at Edison. Mm-hmm. So, but my niece is at Edison. She's doing classes at RIT. And my nephew, I'm not sure where he's going. But my daughter, she plans on going to at least beauty school after high school and then probably coming to MCC. Not that I didn't push her into that one. Mm-hmm. It was all her plan.
Yeah.
To do her computer design prereqs.
What do you think of that?
I'm actually kind of proud of her because she's very right and left brained. So she'll be able to do the cosmetology for the one side and computer for the other side and be able to have, hopefully, a happy future.
See, this is, you know, I think this is an important point here. I asked Kimberly about, you know, what your kids think of seeing you, you know, as a little older college student. And by the way, there's plenty of older college students in you, but, you know, older than maybe just students right out of high school. And, you know, what your kids think of that. And your first reaction to that was that, you know, well, one of your kids is now on a track to go to college themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Kimberly, is this a case where, you know, families... college is just not in the mind of, you know, parents didn't go, the conversation doesn't happen, the kids don't see it modeled, they're not thinking of it. It's just not something that happens. Is that right?
You end up just living life. You try to try to get through each day to day. My mom, I was raised by a single mom. She just tried to get through life. Yes, she wanted better for us. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to be a veterinarian. Like I said, life happened, high school. I got detoured after high school, started raising kids. And my mom was proud of me, but she knew, you know, she didn't do college, but she was strong and she showed me how I wanted to be. And that's what I wanted to be. So I wanted to be a strong mom, and that's what I was. I was hoping anyways. But I knew when I first started at MCC, I knew I could be stronger. And I could show my kids how they could, you know, just push forward, you know, like a friend of mine used to keep saying, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming, you know.
And you've got decades of life ahead, and you're going to have this degree, and you're going to have a chance to move on to Brockport mm-hmm. and become a counselor, do work that feels really, really valuable to you.
Yep.
Hopefully make a good living doing it.
Yeah.
You know, decent living.
Yeah.
You know, how important is the money, the income?
Actually, honestly, the money... I haven't really had money to begin with, so the money really isn't a big deal. If it is, if I get good money, yay. I won't have to worry about buying groceries that week or the bills. Woohoo! But I just want to be able to help people. At least one person before I leave this planet. I want to be able to help at least one person and help them help. Because if you help one person, that person can help two people. And then those people can help other people and so on and so forth. And maybe... You know, maybe the love will spread.
It's awesome. It's awesome stuff. So that's Kimberly's stat story. And I want to ask Kimberly what I was talking to James about. You know, James gave a very interesting answer when we talk about why it is that, you know, roughly 89% of low-income first-generation students don't graduate within 6 years. And 75% of first-generation students, no matter their income, don't graduate. So why that happens. I mean, James talked about the cynicism. Bernard and James have both talked about how, you know, occasionally you take flack for sharing your dreams with people, wanting to be the student who's working hard for the test, mm-hmm. et cetera. You know, some of that socialization, that stigmatization can come. Why? But, you know, Kimberly, you're somebody who you're very used to living, as you said, paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. dealing with, you know, food stamps, making sure kids have food, all of that. And now you kind of go back into the college system, but you were terrified of the finances.
Absolutely.
Do you think that's a big reason that first-gen students don't have a high graduation rate?
Oh, definitely. I've seen a few of my friends who, because of certain, like, grades or something, their financial aid got cut, and they have to live, pay out of pocket. Classes, let's just admit it, classes are expensive if you're paying out of pocket. $700 here, $700 there. Not everybody can afford that. So, you know, they give up. They feel defeated no matter how much you try to help. you know, you point them in the right direction, they give up.
Do you feel any different now? You're a college student. You're on your way to, you know, sort of a different career path for yourself. Do you feel different?
I feel completely different. I was not a smiler. And I smile all the time. I'm happy to see people. I talk to everybody. Drives my kids crazy, by the way. We can't go anywhere. I have to wear a hat and glasses because apparently everybody knows me. So.
Well, just great stuff here. We've got a few minutes left to talk to Kimberly Statt, James Wynn, Bernard Rogers, who are first-generation college students. Bernard, I didn't ask you. I asked both of them. But why do you think, you know, the graduation rates aren't very high for first-gen students? What's your thought on that?
I agree with what both Kim and James said. I think part of it is, you know, students a lot of times come into college and they're living out the dreams of what their parents want them to do or what their parents think is safe for them, and they don't ever really get the chance to really discover who they are, what they want to do, regardless of whether it's going to bring tons of money at the end or if it's going to be 100% secure. But I'm just glad to hear both of them mention that and to know that we're in a time and in a space now where you can make a phenomenal living just because we're also interconnected with, you know, the internet and social media. You can make a great living doing what it is you love and you dream about. And also, dually, I think another big thing is the financial aspect. For me, so many times I always try to tear down this kind of view that people have of me that, you know, my life is perfect. And it's not, because when I was applying to schools, I didn't know how I was going to pay for college. I didn't know, to me, you know, $1,000 was a lot of money. So, and I didn't have $1,000. So to tell me that you potentially want me to pay $50,000 a year or even $14,000 a year, like that was astronomical to me at that time because my scope was just so limited. So I think that's another thing as well, and exposure too. I always tell students to have as much exposure as you can, because the more people you put yourself around, the more exposure you have, the more people you meet. Those are, you know, networks of people who can help you out.
Bernard just said something. I've got to ask all three to follow up on what Bernard just said, because my mind just went back to a conversation we had about sticker prices. We had college presidents, university presidents from public and private here, and they're admonishing me. You can't look at the sticker price. Okay, you know, NAS is 40-something, RIT is 47, U of R 61, Hobart 61. But no, you know, very few are paying that number. Well, what Bernard just said was, in your mind, you're trying to figure out, how am I going to pay for this, whether it's 14 or 50. Well, what they would have said is, Bernard, someone with your background and family background, you would never pay 50. But in your mind, you saw those sticker prices. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, how am I going to pay 50? So the sticker price still matters here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely matters. And I think we need more staples in place that explain these things and explain how financial aid works and explains how there are scholarships out there. And like I said, for me, I was just, I don't know, some kind of place in the universe God allowed this opportunity to come up to pay for my tuition. But then there are also my high school counselor who I worked with to find other scholarships to apply for to help me pay for like housing and things of that nature. And even once I got into RIT, though my tuition was covered, it was covered in a series of different ways. So it was through scholarships, through financial aid, through loans. So I have about $15,000 that I have to pay back, which I'm not complaining about at all. But just to know that it just doesn't end with that as well. You'll always kind of have things that you come up on that you have to kind of figure out a way to work through them.
Okay. James, what do you think about sticker prices? You know, the university presidents, they keep saying, you can't look at the sticker price. You got to look at the average price. Very few are paying the sticker price. First generation students have enough obstacles, but if you're in your mind are looking at a sticker price thinking, well, I'll never be able to climb that mountain, as opposed to knowing, well, the average student gets this and the average, you know, does the sticker price matter?
I agree with Bernard. When I do graduate, Fisher, also, I will have a lot of money I will have to pay back.
Sure.
And the problem with the finance aspect is that most first gens aren't able to even pay the reduced price, really. And that is just another obstacle that they do have to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Kimberly, what do you think?
Actually, believe it or not, when I leave here, I'm going to go and apply for the new scholarship that they have for the Excelsior Scholarship that pays for tuition the state's putting out. So I suggest anybody who wants to, anybody who's in the SUNY school district, SUNY system, there's the fantastic scholarship, the Excelsior, covers your tuition. So you have to read about it, but I believe it covers like the community and your 4-year. So
Before we lose the hour here, let's grab a phone call. We've got Rebecca Jones on the line with us, so let's go ahead and grab Rebecca. Rebecca Johnson. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, Evan, and hi, Bernard, and hi, everyone
else.
Hi.
I'm Rebecca Johnson. I'm married to retiring President Bill Destler of RIT.
We were talking about you.
Yes, I heard. he and I was with a bunch of other great people, helped to start the Rochester City Scholars Program that Bernard is mentioning. And Bernard and a lot of other great people helped to populate that program. And I'm just calling to say that I think from hearing Bernard and from hearing all the other wonderful scholars on your program, I think that it should be abundantly clear to folks how great it is for these students, for Rochester, and for the world to make sure that these students get a chance to get to college, get higher education, get better opportunities for themselves, and get to have leadership positions in our world. They're just terrific folks, and they're great resources.
Bernard, you want to say hi to Rebecca, too, as well?
Hi, Rebecca. It's so great to hear your voice, and I completely agree and echo everything that you're saying.
Rebecca, first of all, tell Bill that we're overdue to sit down on this program. I mean, I don't know where you guys are hanging out these days, but we'd love to bring you in if you're ever around. So.
Well, we think that would be fun, and we're hanging out in Rochester.
Good.
we are moving to Cobbs Hill. I'm over washing floors at Cobbs Hill as we speak, and we would love to talk more to you.
And tell Bill,
I pass your greetings on to Bill.
Absolutely, he can bring his banjo too. By the way, I would love that.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, one more quick question for you, Rebecca.
We'll bring a few of them. We have plenty.
Before I let you go, Rebecca, one more quick question. You know, I'm looking at some of the numbers for first gen students, and you hear these great, inspiring stories. How are we going to make higher education, generally speaking, first gen or otherwise, more accessible going forward? Because I know you and Bill believe in it very deeply. How are we going to make it more accessible?
Well, I think that Bill's probably, you know, the better person to quote facts and figures to you on that. I think that, among other things, the shows like you're doing today, so that people know what we are getting if we enable first-gen students to go to college. You know, we talk about our oil reserves in this country. We talk about our mineral reserves, but in fact, we need to make sure that we're using all of our brain and heart reserves. And you can see amply from this show that if we can get these folks to college, we can really strengthen not only them and their families, but our communities and our country.
Rebecca, thank you. Stay on the line. Our producer's going to say hi to you, and I'll hopefully see you and Bill soon.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Rebecca. So that's Rebecca Johnson, and so you heard Bernard talking about her and Bill Destler and the work that they've done for students like Bernard. So I'll give you the last word then, Bernard. What's your advice for first-gen future students? Because there's going to be plenty. What's your advice?
Well, my advice is to, in any place you are, anywhere you go, to constantly be exposing yourself to what's out there in our world, and to put yourself in a community of people who are there to love, support you, guide you, and who are in the place where you want to be. Really, there's a phenomenal program that I said I would definitely try to mention if I got the opportunity, and I wish I had knew about it before I entered RIT. It's called Gear Up RIT, and it's a program for students K through 12th grade to learn about college, to learn about the social aspects, the financial aspects, the academic aspects, and really learn about courses in their field that they may be thinking about.
Well, 5 years from now, all three of you, right back here, same table with me. Will you come back in 5 years and we'll see how things are going?
Of course.
Kimberly, James, Bernard.
Yes.
You're going to have to fly in from wherever you are.
It's done.
Okay. Bernard's going to be here. You're going to be here, James?
Yep.
Kimberly?
I'll be here.
I just want to congratulate all of you on the path you're on and for sharing your experiences. Thank you so much, Bernard. Great meeting you.
Thank you.
James,
awesome meeting you.
Thank you so much. Kimberly, best of luck to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Remarkable stories of first-gen students. Let's get a short break. More Connections next.